Okay, we're beginning on the top of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, three lines down. Amar Rabba Bar Shila, Amar Rab Matna, Amar Shmuel, Masev Talu Et Shliyah Bevlad Ad Asara Yamim. We have here a member from Shmuel that says that a placenta that came out 10 days after there was a birth of a baby, we were told that the Shliyah, the placenta, was connected to that original birth. Velo Amru Tolim El B'Shliyah HaBa'a Achar HaVlad. It's also true that we only assume that the placenta belonged to the birth child that came out if it comes after, post the birth of the child. But if it happened prior to that, then we don't assume that it is associated with that child that was born. That's because it's uncommon for the placenta to be discharged before there is a birth. It's very common for there to be a birth and then have the placenta discharged a number of days later. For that reason, if it's beforehand, then we assume that was another vlad associated with that placenta. Whatever was born afterwards is a new entity. Whereas if it comes out or is discharged after the birth of the child or the vlad, then at that point we assume the placenta was connected to the birth. Amar Rabba Barachanam Rabbi Yochanan, Masiv Talu et Shliyah Bevlad Ad Kaf Gimel Yamim. So Shmuel said up to 10 days. Now Rabbi Yochanan is adding that they had an incident where the placenta came out 23 days afterwards, and they were still toled, they still connected it with the birth that had taken place 23 days earlier. Amalei Rabbi Yosef, ad kaf dalet amar plan. Rabbi Yosef just points out it wasn't 23 days, but rather it was 24 days that you had told us about. Amar Rav Acha braid Rabbi Yevira, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, maseh v'nishtaya vlad achar chavero lamed gimel yom. There was an incident in which twins that were in utero, one of them was born, and then the second one only exited 33 days later. Amalei Rav Yosef, Lamedalet Amartlan. Once again, Rav Yosef said it was 34 days, not 33 days. The Aruch Lener asks, why does Rav Yosef, in both these incidents, have an extra day? Seems a little strange that they had 23 and 33, and he says, no, he said 24 and 34. Why would there be confusion about the number? So he claims that the difference between the opinions was that it was made late. It was a 24-hour period. So it was 23 24-hour periods, but it turns out to be over 24 days because the 24 hours weren't running exactly along the clock of the day. And so it turns out that if you have from the first to last, it would be 24 days, not whole days, or 23 24-hour periods, but they extend over 24 days. And similarly with the 33 and the 34. And that's why Rabbi Yosef was differing in these cases. When it says, Anicha lemanda amar yoledet the tisha yoledet the mekutayim, that makes sense according to one who says that even in a 9-month term, the woman gives birth at less than 9 months. Mishkachala, then you have such a case. Echad nigmara tzu'ato, the sof shiva, one of the twins finished, was fully mature and then born at the end of the 7th month. Echad nigmara tzu'ato, the tchilat tisha. And the other one was born at the beginning of the 9th month. Elamanda amar yoledet the tisha, inu yoledet the mekutayim. According to the one who says that if you go to 9-month term, the baby's only born at the end of the 9-month term, then ma'ika the meimar. You don't have a situation in which the twins could be born over a duration of 33 days and have them be viable entities. So this is based on the Gemara's view, which was a very common view amongst the science of the time, as well as into the time of the Rishonim, that a woman's term was 9 months, which is well known. But then there is also a possibility of a woman giving birth in the 7th month. But a woman does not give birth in the 8th month. And if she does give birth in the 8th month, then it is a stillborn. It will not be a viable entity. So the only options in terms of birth are in the 7th month and in the 9th month. So you have an early born baby in the 7th month and you have a late born baby in the 9th month. As far as the 7th month is concerned, everybody there believes that you can have it be born anywhere during the 7th month. That means from the beginning to the end of the 7th month, any time during that period is considered to be a normal birth and a viable entity. As far as the 9th month is concerned, this is where we have a machloket. In the 9th month, is the baby only viable, is only a birth when it goes full term? So full term means to the end of the 9 months. Or also in the 9th month, we have the same consideration that we have by the 7th month, which is it can be born anywhere during the 9th month. So that's what the Gemara points out here. According to the one who says that during the ninth month, it's no different than the seventh month, it could be born anywhere during the ninth month, then I could come up with a scenario where you have a baby that is born in the seventh month, and then a baby that's born in the ninth month, and they are 33 days apart, because the first one was born at the end of the seventh month, and the other one's born at the beginning of the ninth month. Problem is, if you believe that you can only have a baby in the ninth month when it goes to full term, to full maturity, then you can't find a case where you have babies that are born 33 days apart. Because the seventh month is only 30 days. So if it was the one baby was born at the beginning of the seventh month, the other one would be born already into the eighth month, which would not be a viable entity. And similarly with the ninth month. If it was born at the beginning of the ninth month, then the other baby at the end of the ninth month would be over the 30-day period. And then it wouldn't be possible to have such a scenario. One of them would be born during the eighth month. And if that's the case, one of them wouldn't be viable entities. So that's a question on the one who says that the ninth month has to go to full term. How do we have a scenario like this of the 33 days? All right, so now the Gemara says, Ipoch Shmaitito. Flip the two memorot that we had over here with regards to the duration after the Shiliah and the duration between the two twins that were born. And Lamed Gimel the Shiliah, and we'll say that when the placenta came out was 33 days after the birth, and they were told that the Shiliah with the birth, Kaf Gimel the Vlad. And the 23 days were the duration between the two births of the twins, and in that way they both could have been born in the seventh month, one at the beginning of the seventh month, one at the end of the seventh month, 23 days apart, and that would be possible or plausible even according to the one who says that in the ninth month you go to full term. Here both babies were born during the seventh month, and one at the beginning, one at the end. Amar Rabbi Avin Barav Ado, Amar Rabbi Nachem Ishkfar She'arim, Amila Beit She'arim, the village of She'arim, or whether it was the city of Beit She'arim, Maseh V'nishtai Vlad Echad Achar Chaveiro Gimel Chodoshim. There was an incident in which a twin was born 3 months after its brother. Barihem Yoshvim Lefaneinu Beit Midrash. And if you think this is some fanciful idea, they're both sitting in front of us here in the Beit Midrash. Uman Ninu. And who are they? Yehuda V'Chizkia B'nei Rabbi Chia. These are the twins. Yehuda and Chizkia, the children of Rabbi Chia. V'amar Mar, Enisha Mitaberet, Chozeret Umitaberet. The Gemara here says, wait a minute. How could it be that Yehuda and Chizkia were born 3 months apart? That would mean that the woman conceived and then conceived again 3 months later. Gemara at this point can't fathom the possibility that they were conceived at the same time and born at different times. They're assuming if there's such a big gap of 3 months, it must have been two conceptions that took place. And that, the Gemara thinks, is impossible. Again, so does the Bali at Tosafot in the end. Rashi does think that there is a possibility of conception after an original conception. Amar Abaye, Tipa Achat Haita, V'nitkalka L'shtayim. It really was a single entity. And it's subdivided. Echad nigmarat tzurato b'tchilat zayin. One of them was finished, matured at the beginning of the seventh month. V'achar v'sof tet. And the other one at the end of the ninth month. Gemara's assumption here is that there is the possibility of a fetus being mature during the seventh month, even at the beginning of the seventh month, and being viable. And then the other one only maturing at the end of the ninth month and being born then. But then it wasn't two separate conceptions. Also, he points out, which is interesting, they didn't really understand the distinction with regards to twins, but these were, according to this explanation, identical twins, because it was a single conception that subdivided. That's what creates the identical twins, as opposed to situations in which there is a fertilization of two eggs or two fetuses are created where they won't be identical twins. So here it's describing what they were identical twins, and that one of them matured or was complete at the beginning of the seventh month, the other one at the end of the ninth month. It's interesting only because Rav said in the previous daf, V'amar Rav, Ein Avlad Mitakev Achar Chaveiro Klum, that whenever you have twins, they're born in succession, they don't have a gap between them. Which is interesting that Rav didn't know this information, or that Rav wasn't aware of this information. Some suggest that Rav just didn't know of the evidence that was from Rabbi Chia, but that's very unlikely. Because, as the Ramban points out, Rav was, first of all, a nephew of Rabbi Chia, and that means that his first cousins were the twins, and he was familiar with his first cousins. Number two is Rabbi Chiya was his rabbo amuvhak. He learned under Rabbi Chiya's tutelage, so he would have known about this information. And so it's very unlikely that Rab didn't know the information that was presented over here. So the Ramban, in order to reconcile that, says that the distinction between them is the maturity or the completion of the development of the baby. Rab agrees that if one of the children is fully mature and the other one isn't, then one child could be born now and the other child could be born later. What you can't have is two fully matured babies have a gap in duration between them and not be born immediately, successively. And that's what he was describing on the previous Amud. So Rab was describing a case where they reach full maturity, then it's got to be that one is born right after the other. There's no gap. Over here, Rabbi Chiya's twins is a situation in which one was fully mature at the beginning of the seventh month, and one of them was fully mature at the end of the ninth month, and that's why there was a three-month gap. Tell us what Rabbi Chiya says. Vim tomar, b'neima denigmar tzurato, v'shtai ad shmini. Why don't we say here that the possible scenario is that both of them came to full maturity at a certain point in time during the seventh month, and then one of the two fetuses was born 33 days later. So even though we believe that in the seventh month it can come any time, eighth month is not a viable entity, and ninth month had to be at the end, and then we ran into a problem with the 33 days, he says, why don't we just assume that they both reached full maturity at that moment, and then it just hung out in the mother's womb until it came out 33 days later. So even though it came out in the eighth month, it was already mature and finished in the seventh month. So there it is, a viable entity, because the only reason it's being born in the eighth month is not because it needed to reach maturity then. It was already mature back in the seventh month. And he says, because the Hachit led the Rabba Tosfa, because we have such a Shita in Rabba Tosfa, in which a woman gives birth 12 months after her husband left on a voyage overseas for business. So 12 months after her husband left, that doesn't look very good. It seems to me that she conceived 3 months after he already left. Rabba Tosfa says we don't assume the baby's a mamzer. We assume that the baby was completed after the ninth month of the pregnancy and just hung out in the mother for another 3 months until it was born. And so therefore we don't assume the baby is a mamzer. If you have that shita that once the baby is mature, it can hang out inside the mother and then come out later, that would be a way to solve the problem over here. Just say it's like Rabba Tosfa. Now, based on what we said already, that to reconcile between Rab and Rabbi Chiya, you can see that that's not well accepted amongst the Amoraim. And that's what Tosafot knows over here. Most of the Amoraim do not accept Rabba Tosfa because it's a very unlikely scenario. That's the same way that we just answered on behalf of the steer between Rab and Rabbi Chiya. The Rab said when it's fully mature, if one comes out, the other one comes out immediately, meaning that babies don't hang out once they are mature. Whereas for Rabbi Chiya, it's one of the babies came out because it was fully mature, the other one waited because it wasn't fully developed yet, and that's why it delayed till later. But once the baby is fully mature and ready to come out, it just doesn't hang out inside of the mother waiting to come out. Once it's mature, it comes out immediately. And therefore, that's not an option in terms of explaining the scenario over here. So we saw in the Mishnah that if there is a placenta in the house is tamei. And we're going to say the same thing in the Brayta, the Tosefta, as we said in the Mishnah. That's not because the placenta itself is a vlad. That's just because when you have a placenta, it always comes along with a vlad. Tosafot back on Yudchet says that's an absolute statement. The Shilya always has a blood with it. Question might be, what does that blood look like? But there is always a blood. Rashi says, ala rov. In the majority of situations, the placenta has a blood with it. And since that's the majority, we're going to look at it as a kulo, as if it is always that way. And therefore, the bayit is tameh because of the blood that was discharged here, not because of the Shilya itself. That's Rabbi Meir's view. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Mitahari. So as opposed to our Mishnah that only has Rabbi Shimon's opinion, here we have in the Brayta and the Tosefta that there are actually three Tanaim that argue on Rabbi Meir. That's Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Shimon all say that the house is Tahor. Amru lo the Rabbi Meir. Iyata modeh. Don't you agree, Shim Hotziyo b'seifel, if you took it out in a bowl or some sort of utensil, the Bayit Achitzon, to a secondary house, meaning to another room. The inner chamber, the inner room is where the private quarters of the house. So that's where the woman is found. And then if you took it, whatever was born here, and then took it out to the Bayit HaChitzon, Shehu Tahor. Don't you agree that whatever was discharged from the woman is Tahor? Amar lahen, Aval. Yes, Eino Chanami. Aval means Be'emet. It's used in last week's Parsha also with the discussions about Tzachakat Sarah. Also it says there, Aval. Aval means yes, truthfully. So here too, that's what the meaning is. Belama. So why is it that that's the case? The Visheino, because it doesn't exist. So that's Rabbi Meir saying when you move it from the first place to the second place, by the time you get to the second place, it doesn't exist anymore. Amrulo, Kishem Sheinu Bebayit HaChitzon, Kachenu Bebayit HaPnimi. If by the time you carry it to the other room, it doesn't exist, then why don't you say the same thing in the first part of the house or the inner part of the house? Why does it exist there and not exist when you walk it out to the other part of the house? Amr Lahen, Rabbi Meir responds, Enu Domeh Nimok Pam Achat, Le Nimok Bet Peamim. There's a big difference between something that was mashed, dissolved one time, then something that was nimok a second time, which is that you're sitting in a liquid. The discharge in the leida includes lots of water, lots of fluid, lots of dam, plus the vlad, supposedly, that's in this discharge that came out. So it's overwhelmed by liquids and volume of blood. Then what is the status of that vlad contained in that solution? If you take that solution and then move to another location, then you're only increasing the dissolution of the blood that is found inside there because of the movement and the shaking. It's only going to serve to make it worse than it was before. So that's Rabbi Meir's opinion. Rabbi Meir's opinion is that when it's first born, there's still something left of this blood over here. And that something is what causes the tumah in this situation. That something, by the time you move it to the next location, is then now mixed or shaken more to the point where it doesn't exist anymore. So that's Rabbi Meir's view. Whatever is there of the blood exists when it first is discharged by the woman. By the time you take it in a kli from that discharge into the other room, already there it's dissolved, it's shaken up, it's now nothing left of that blood. Whereas the Chachamim believe that whatever took place when you moved it from house one to house two is also true when it was discharged. Whatever the state is the same state, and it doesn't change dramatically. And therefore, it should also be tahor in the discharge of the woman herself. Yativ Rav Papa, Achorei d'Rav Bibi, Kamei d'Rav Hamnuna. Rav Papa was sitting behind Rav Bibi, and they were both sitting in front of Rav Hamnuna. Yativ Kamar, Maitaima d'Rav Shimon. What is the reason behind Rav Shimon's opinion that you're tahor here? Kasavar, Kol Tuma, Shnitarev Ba Mimin Acher, any tumah that has something else mixed up with it, bitela, it takes away from that tumah. Amar lehu Rav Papa, hainu nami taima de Rav Yehuda v'Rav Yossi. Is that also the reason that Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi say that it's tahor as well? You saw all three of these tanaim saying that. Achiku alei, they laughed at him. Maishna, why would there be any difference? It's obvious that they all have the same opinion. Why would you think that Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda have a different opinion than Rabbi Shimon? If that's the reason Rabbi Shimon is Mitaher, that should be the reason that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda were Mitaher. And that's Pshita. So they laughed at him. Amar Papa, Afilu kiha milta, lema inish, velo nishtok. Even that silly thing like I asked, a person should speak up and say, and not be silent, kamei Rabbi, in front of his Rebbe. Bishum shenemar, because the Pasuk says, im navalta, if you acted foolishly, or you made yourself look foolish, or you denigrated yourself, then in the end, behit nasei, then you will be uplifted and you will be successful. Im zamota, on the other hand, if you were silent or you planned evil, which means that you're thinking without doing, yad lapeh, put your finger to your mouth, which means that you have nothing to say. The way that he darshans the pasuk is, if you are minavel, which means to have a negative association with your reputation, the way that you present yourself, then in the end, you will eat nasei, you'll be successful, and you'll be a Rebbe. So if you ask the silly questions, then many times you'll get answers that you wouldn't have gotten if you didn't ask the question. On the other hand, if you hold back and don't ask the question, you may never know the information, you may never know that it was wrong or it was a good question. So that is a reason to speak up. So even though they made fun of me and they laughed at me, it was worthwhile to speak up and be laughed at, because in the end, I'll know the answer to the question. Sometimes it's not a good question and they'll laugh at me, but sometimes it is a good question. And at least I will know the answer to the question. And that's what he said, that he encourages people not to be embarrassed to ask questions, even when they are silly questions, because then you understand. If you don't ask the question, you'll never know. The difference between a good student and a poor student, the poor student never asks a question. Looks like they understand everything. If they understand everything, then they never get to the true core, because they don't ask. Even when they have doubts, they don't speak up. The good student asks every time they have a doubt, even if it's a poor doubt or it's a poor question, they still ask, because sometimes the question will be good, and then that good question will result in an answer that clarifies the situation for them. That was Rav Papa speaking about himself, whereby they embarrassed him, or he was embarrassed by his question when they laughed at him, Rav Bibi and Rav Amnuna, over his question as to why there should be any distinction between Rabbi Shimon's opinion and Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi. And we'll see in a second, we'll get to this in a second, Ma'azar Rav Shimon Latameh, that this is Rabbi Shimon the Shitato. So that might be what triggered Rav Papa's question, which is that the Gemara is about to say that this is Rav Shimon the Shitato, and therefore maybe that's uniquely Rabbi Shimon's opinion, and maybe Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda have a different reason for it. That's probably what precipitated Rav Papa's question. Maybe this is uniquely associated with Rabbi Shimon versus Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Now that is because the Tanya, Melo Tarvad Rekev, if you have a spoonful or a ladle full of rot from a mate, Shenafala Tocho Afar Koshu, if any other dirt got mixed up with it, Tameh, it's still Tameh. Rabbi Shimon Mitaher. Rabbi Shimon says it is Tahar. What you see from here is that Rabbi Shimon's belief is that whenever you have a foreign object that gets mixed in with the Rekev Hamet, it is no longer Rekev Hamet. And similarly, you would say over here by the Shiliah, that when the discharge of the Shiliah means that there was a blood that came out, with that blood that exited, which we can't find, so obviously the blood was not in its whole entity, it was dissolved somehow, it's in pieces when it's exiting. That blood that exited also had along with it Dama Leida, the Mayim of the Leida. There were plenty of other things along with it. And so those other things that came along with it undermined its ability to be Mitameh, the house that is there. And that'd be Rabbi Shimon Lishitato. The question as to why it is that the Shiliah is Mitameh, even though it is dissolved over here, and we're comparing it to a Melo Tarvad Rekev, we're comparing it to a spoonful or a ladle full of rot from the mate, that is the question of the Rishonim as to what exactly was the problem or what exactly was the Tumah that was created here if the blood was actually dissolved. If it was completely dissolved, why would you think that it should be considered Tameh in this house? So Rashi says here, my time of the Rabbi Shimon, Nehi Dinimok, even though it's totally dissolved, Mikol makom kol gufo shomeit kan. The entirety of the mate is here. Vava le kerekev ukenetzel. And therefore it's like a rotted mate or the residual of a mate that's left. And there you have a melotar vad worth of it. If you have a melotar vad worth of rekev and mate that's left over, then that is enough to make the house tamei or to treat it like tuma alacha lamosh misinai, that is mitamei ba'ohel. And so it's over here. The vlad that is dissolved here, it's entirely here. It's just dissolved, and it's like rekev and netzel. It's just something that's been ruined or rotted, and that's why it would be considered to be tamei. And therefore, we want to know, why does Rabbi Shimon think you're not tamei in this case? So the answer according to Rashi, or the comparison according to Rashi, is very exact, which is that rekev and netzel, which is the melotar vad case of Rabbi Shimon, there it's mitamei boel. And Rashi is saying that a vlad that's dissolved is called rekev and netzel, and therefore it should also be mitameh. So explain to me why Rabbi Shimon thinks otherwise. The answer is that Rabbi Shimon by rekev tells us if there's anything mixed in with it, it ruins it. Similarly, by the case of the vlad, other things that are mixed in with it are going to ruin the fact that it is there, and then for that reason, it's not going to be mitameh. And that's Rabbi Shimon litameh. That's how Rashi explains the Gemara. Amongst the Rishonim, there are other views that disagree with what Rashi suggests over here, and that's because there are a number of problems with Rashi's suggestion, including the fact that the requirement of Mlotar Vad over here is not mentioned at all by the case of the Vlad. Both from the perspective of, if you have a Mlotar Vad, Rabbi Shimon says that if you have anything else mixed in with it, it ruins it. That's only true when it's exactly a Mlotar Vad. When it exceeds a Mlotar Vad, and you only have a partial bittul of the Vlad, even Rabbi Shimon agrees that it's not ruined. So that's number one. So how do you know this nafel or this discharge was not bigger than that? If that's the case, then you can't explain why Rabbi Shimon is mitaher in this case. Or vice versa. If the item is below the level of Mlotar Vad, then why should it be mitameh here by the Vlad? So the Mlotar Vad should have played a central role in the question with regards to the discharge of the Vlad, yet it's not mentioned at all. So that's one thing, and we'll see other parts of our Gemara upcoming that seem to indicate that that is not the reason why the Vlad is tameh over here. And therefore the Balei HaTosafot offer an alternative, which is Lekach Nira Dari, the Nefel Shebishilya, Einalav Torat Netzel Verekev. Disagrees with Rashi and says that you have a Vlad that discharges with the placenta, or even separately with the placenta, but it came out in obviously a liquid form. There's no such thing as Rekev and Netzel with regards to such an entity. It was never ever reached the point where it was fully developed. It didn't have any flesh, because otherwise you would be seeing that in the discharge. So obviously you're dealing with a liquid discharge. Because the Tosafot says that Rekev Amet only has application to a fully grown human being. There's no such thing as Rekev Amet associated with the Nefel. So therefore, Mitamei Mitam Meit Shalem. The reason over here has nothing to do with Rekev and Netzel, but has to do with the fact that you have an entire entity over here. The Rekev that we're speaking about by Rabbi Shimon is Malo Tarvad Rekev. It is a spoonful or a ladleful of Rekev, of rot from the mate. That is a shiur that's not the entire mate. It is a portion of the mate. Over here, even though it's not classified as Rekev or Netzel, still you have the entirety of the mate itself that's here. The Vlad in its entirety is going out. Therefore, even in a liquid form or even in a dissolved form, the fact that you have an entire mate over here is the reason for why it's mitamei bo'ohel, not because of Rekev and Netzel. The truth is that the Aruch Haner in the end says that he doesn't think Rashi disagrees. Because Rashi says something along those lines, which is, Nehi dinimok mikomakom kol gufo shel mate kan, that the entirety of the body of the mate is here, and therefore it has a din kerekev ukenetzel. So it might be that Rashi is not saying anything different than the Balei Tosafot, because he also requires that kol gufo be here. Nevertheless, the Balei Tosafot, who don't focus on this word kol over here, are coming up with a different explanation, saying that Rashi is saying that it's rekev and netzel, which isn't possible. And I think it's because the whole mate is found here, and that's the reasoning why you would think that it should be tamei, and now we need a reason as to why it's not tamei in that scenario. And the answer that's given by the Gemara is that you have something else mixed in with it. It's one thing to have the whole mate. It's another thing to have the whole mate with other items mixed together with it, water, liquid, blood, all those things together with the mate, even if it's a whole mate, is reason enough to say that it's no longer mitamei. The Ramban has a different view over here. The Ramban says that the reason that it's mitameh over here is because the Vlad is not completely liquefied. There are pieces of the Vlad that are still intact over here. There are chunks or pieces of the Vlad that are also being discharged along with the liquid and the dam that's coming out. And that will explain, first of all, the machloket between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon, as well as the reason why it's mitameh over here. And that is because, yes, if the Vlad was totally liquefied, everyone agrees that it's not mitameh. Even Rabbi Meir agreed that when you move it to the second house and it's liquefied, that it's not mitameh. The question is, when you have pieces of the Vlad that are still somewhat intact, what is the status of that entity together? And that's really the machlok between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says as long as there are pieces that are there of the Vlad, then being in a single ohel is mitzaref them, and that makes it into something that is tumah and not something that is dissolved or batel. Whereas Rabbi Shimon already says, there's no identifiable Vlad over here. You just have pieces. And that by itself, if it's mixed with other things, already is mitbatel, its ability to be aggregated into a single entity and make the place tameh. But obviously when you carry it from the first house to the second house, by that time, everything is dissolved. And even Rabbi Meir is going to agree that it's not mitameh tumah tahola. That's the Ramban's explanation for First of all, why would the Gemara think you are Tamei? And why should Rabbi Shimon have to respond to that? And that's because of this idea that here the blood is not totally dissolved. It's not totally liquefied. It has pieces of it that are still intact. And that's what's driving the Gemara's question as to what is Rabbi Shimon's shita over here. So now, according to the Tosafot's reasoning over here, and truthfully, even according to Rashi's reasoning, you would have to ask the same question of Rabbi Meir as you're asking of Rabbi Shimon. Because even Rabbi Meir agrees, by the time you get to the second house, it is Tahor. On the other hand, the Ramban says that that's not the case, because the Ramban's reasoning as to why Rabbi Shimon differs from Rabbi Meir has to do with the fact that in the first house, there's still pieces of the Nepha that are still intact, these small pieces that are aggregating to make it Tameh. By the time you get to the second house, it's completely liquid. And therefore, for Rabbi Meir, it's not a question as to why the first house is Tameh and the second one is not Tameh, because there's a difference in the consistency of the liquid. And therefore, there's a fundamental difference between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Meir in the first instance, which is when you have these little pieces that are left, can you mitzareif them to get to the minimum shiur that is required? And that's what the Gemara's question now is. According to Rabbi Shimon, why not? Why is it that you can't aggregate them together in order to make them into a single shiur? According to Rabbi Meir, there's no question here, because that's his position here. And it changes when you move to the outer house, because their pieces are no longer there. According to Rabbi Shimon, who says you're tahor in both instances, why don't we say that when you aggregate the pieces, it is tameh? On the other hand, for the shita of the Tosfot and the Rashi, there should be no difference between the first house and the second house, and the question of Rabbi Shimon is equally a question on Rabbi Meir as well. So the Gemara explained that Rabbi Shimon's shita is tied to his view with regards to Rekev, that has afar koshu in there. Rabbi Shimon is mitaher. And now my time at the Rabbi Shimon. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon's opinion? Amar Rabo, and probably the gears to change should be Amar Robo, Ashkechinu l'Rabbanan debate Rav. I found the Rabbanan learning in the Beit Midrash of Rav. The Yatve v'Kamre, they said the following. Efshar shelo yerbu shtei predot afar al preda achat shel rekev. It's impossible that you won't find a particular location in which there is a little more afar than there is rekev. Remember here, we're dealing with the exact amount of rekev that you need to meet the threshold shiur. That's below tarvat. It's a spoonful or a ladleful of rot. That you have exactly the amount that makes it that it would be tameh. Now, if you have a little afar, a little dirt mixed in with it, and somewhere in that mixture, there's going to be a place where there are two pieces of afar against one piece of rekev, and that will overwhelm it, it'll even vatel it. If you're mevatel any small amount here, then you're below the threshold shiur. And that's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon's opinion, that there is bittul here because of the fact that the rekev is not a single entity. It is distinct particles. And that makes it very different than a normal entity. If you have a single entity, then you can't say that a little bit of a fire is going to be mevatel the entity. But if the entity consists of an aggregation of particulates, the rekev, then the granules of the rekev versus the granules of the afar can overwhelm one piece of the rekev. That's the case. You're missing the shiur. You're missing something from the shiur. Aminu lehu, Rava says, I responded to them, Adarabba, why don't you just say the opposite? If shar shalom yibush de predot rekev, I'll pray the achad shel afar. Isn't it possible that it's just the other way around? Which is that it's possible that you have a granule or particulate of rekev, which are two pieces of that overwhelm one piece of afar, and it's mevatel in the other direction. And therefore, ben nofish le shiura. And then the shiur is above the threshold that we had there. Now, the Chazon Ish believes that you cannot do something like that. You can't have bittul, which actually increases the intensity of the shiur that is there. So if you have rekev, you have a melot tarvad worth of rekev. So now you can't say that the afar that's added to it then is batel to it, and now you have more than a melot tarvad of rekev. Bittul doesn't work in that way. Bittul doesn't convert something from what it wasn't into something new now, and it can't add onto a shiur through bittul. All you can say through bittul is that the other item doesn't exist, and therefore it doesn't ruin that which you have here. So the Chazon Ish explains that Rova's response wasn't that it actually is converting into a greater shiur of rekev, but simply, if what you're saying is true, then you could look at it in the opposite way. Which is, you're telling me that there's a fire that overwhelms the particulates of rekev, You could have the same thing the other way, that the particulates of the rekab overwhelm the afar. In that case, it's batel. Or maybe even what he is suggesting is, even though these are particulates or granules that are independent, nevertheless, because it requires an aggregated shiur of melotar vad, we still look at the whole entity. And in the whole entity, the rekab can overcome the afar. If that's the case, the afar is not problematic for the rekab over here, and the rekab should still exist. So Rava says that can't be the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon's position. Elam Rabba, I know time with Rabbi Shimon. This must be the explanation of Rabbi Shimon's position. So folk in tchilato, the end is like the beginning. Mat tchilato naselo davar acher gan gilon. Just like in the beginning, when they mate, the corpse starts to rot. That if there's anything else there, it is, according to Rashi, the word gan gilon means that it is mivatelet. As Rashi says over here, the word gan gilon means davar homemade kinegdo davadlo. It's a opposing force that is mivatelet ulekalkolo, and to ruin it. Tosafot brings from the oruch, that is davar niglal imo, which is from the word galgal, like a wheel. Something that rolls with it. It gets wrapped up with it, and it ruins it because it's now mixed up together with it. Mahi, what's the scenario? The Tanya. Ezu mate sheish lo rekev. What type of mate has rekev, has rot that's associated with it, that has the din of the halacha l'moshe m'Sinai that we saw about malot harvad rekev? Ezu mate sheish lo rekev. And which corpse or which mate does not have this din of rekev? Nikvar arum, if the mate was buried naked, be'aron shel shayish, in a sarcophagus made out of marble, o'al gavrit spat shel avanim, or on bedrock, zeu mate sheish lo rekev. That's a mate that has rekev. Be'ezu mate she'ein lo rekev. What's a mate that doesn't have rekev or rot to it? Nikvar b'ksuto. It's buried in his tachrichim, in clothing, o be'aron shel eitz, or in a wooden coffin, o'al gavrit spat shel levanim, or on a ground that's made out of bricks. All of those deteriorate along with the mate. Zeu mate she'ein lo rekev. That is a mate that doesn't have rekev because of the fact that other things are decomposing along with the mate. And the rule is, this is what we're learning from this Braita Tosefta, is that rekev only has relevance when it's pure rekev. It has to be pure rot of the mate in order to qualify as rekev hamate. So anything that would decompose along with the mate would ruin that, would make it that it's not just solely rekev hamate. And so if the body has tachrichim on it, it's in a wooden coffin, it is on a ritzpat levenim of bricks that dissolve or that will decompose along with the body, all of those will cause a mixing between the rekev hamate and whatever object they are together with. And then if you use things that don't decompose, first of all, no clothing, and the coffin is made out of marble, not out of wood, and or it's on stone and not on bricks. All of those are items that do not decompose. Those aren't items that change. Therefore, whatever you have here now is only rekev amate. Lo amru rekev el amate bilvad. Only a mate, someone who passed away, can have rekev. Lima'ute haruk. That comes to exclude someone who was killed, delo, that doesn't have rekev amate. That's because some of the blood of the individual was discharged at the time that they were killed. They were killed, there was bleeding of the mate. That loss of blood makes it that you don't have rekev. Now it's interesting because as the Bali Tosafot will point out, that rekev only comes from the bones and the basara mate. Dam can't create neker rekev hamate. So if that's the case, then why is the Gemara focused on whether the dam was spilled when the person was killed? Why does that matter? So Tosafot says that it's true that the rekev can't come from the dam, but there is another aspect of rekev hamate, which means that the mate has to be whole. In order for there to be rekev hamate, it has to come from a mate that was whole or fully there when it decomposed. If anything is missing from the mate when it decomposed, then it's not considered to be rekev hamate. That means both if it was killed and you're missing, or if there was some death that also involved loss of blood, or anything else from the mate, when they died, it would also be problematic according to this. At the time that they passed away, then if before that they were living, whatever the entity was that they were living as, maybe it was missing a finger, maybe it was missing some internal organ, but they were able to live and survive, then that was a living entity. When they died, that whole entity needs to be there in order for there to be rekev hamate. If something then is discharged or taken out at the time of death, then that is missing from the mate. If that's the case, there is no rekev hamate. Now, the way that we're going to explain this is, Ma tchilato af sofo. The reason you marry Rabbi Shimon is, just like in the beginning, Rekav Amet, that has anything else mixed in with it, is not called Rekav Amet, so do in the end. When you have the Malot Arvad of Rekav, whenever you have a certain shiur of Rekav, if anything else is mixed in with it, it negates the Rekav Amet that is there, just like it negates it in the beginning. If a mate has clothing on, then the Rekav Amet never comes to fruition because the decomposition includes other items. So just like the decomposition in the original state of creation of that Rekav must be solely the mate, so too in the back end, when you have Rekav Amet, or the requisite shiur of Rekav Amet of Malot Arvad, it'll only be Mitameh if it's solely Rekav Amet. If there's anything mixed in with it, then it's not considered to be Rekav Amet. Now, going back to our Gemara over here with regards to the Shilya, what is the conclusion of the Gemara over here? The Gemara now explained Rabbi Shimon's Shita. Now, does the Gemara then still say, V'azdei Rabbi Shimon Litameh? Rabbi Shimon is following his position. So for many of the Rishonim, including the Balei HaTosafot, it seems from here the Gemara's conclusion is that Rekav Amet is a unique din in Rekav Amet. And that is that by Rekav Amet, when you have something else mixed in with it, it undermines Rekav Amet. That's both in the beginning and at the end. And that explains Rabbi Shimon's Shita with regards to Rekav Amet. But the Gemara said that Rabbi Shimon's opinion by Shilya was Azder Rabbi Shimon Litameh. Rabbi Shimon was following his position by Rekav Amet, and that is impactful by the Shilya as well. Now, when the Gemara says this is the reason of Rabbi Shimon, Rabbah comes and explains Rabbi Shimon's reasoning, is the Gemara now rejecting that parallel? It's very possible, and that's what the Balei HaTosafot, the Ramban, and other Rishonim say, is that the Gemara here, in the end, rejects the correlation between the issue of Rekav Amet and the Shilya. That's because Rekav Amet has its own unique dinim. And those unique dinim only apply to Rekav Amet, and Shilya is not an issue of Rekav Amet, except for Rashi. Rashi, who says that the reason behind Shilya is Rekav and Netzel, and according to Rashi, even in the conclusion here, the Gemara maintains the connection between the two, and it tells you that whenever you have something else mixed in with the Rekav, it undermines the Rekav. And so just like over here, it undermines the Rekav, so too by the case of the Shilya. When the blood comes out and it has other things mixed in with it, and that's Rekav Amet, it's ruined by that because there's other things mixed in with it. If you follow through with Rashi's reasoning, the Gemara stands in the end that there is this connection, and it's also the explanation for why it happens to be that the blood is Mitameh. On the other hand, according to the Balei HaTosafot and the Ramban, who think that the reasoning for the blood is different than Rekav Amet, then the Gemara's conclusion over here is that there's no correlation between the two of them. Rekav Amet is its own unique din, that when you have something else that's mixed in with it, it undermines the din of Rekav Amet, and that's uniquely associated with that. By the Shilya and the Vlad that exits, the reasoning over there wasn't Rekav. According to the Balei HaTosafot, it's because you had a mate shalem, and according to the Ramban, it's because you had pieces that were still there, intact, or visible of the mate. And then we'll have to see later why it is that, according to the Ramban, and according to the Balei HaTosafot, that we say that it is Tahor, even though this is a unique din in Rekav, then what is Rabbi Shimon's position? Although Rashi works a little bit better, because the Gemara says, V'azda Rabbi Shimon l'tameh. And the Rashba points out that anytime the Gemara uses Azda, somebody l'tameh, it is only the maskana. That situation stays even the maskana. So according to Rashi, Gemara's maskana is that the comparison between Rekav and the Shilya is still intact. Whereas for the other Rishonim, that gets dropped. And therefore the Rashba makes a suggestion that the Gemara's statement of Avzda Rabbi Shimon Tameh was not a statement, but rather a question. Avzda Rabbi Shimon Tameh is really a part of the response to Rav Papa as to why he thought that Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda should have a differentiated opinion. They're saying back to him, Bazar Rabbi Shimon Tameh, why you think Rabbi Shimon has his own reasoning over here, which is not applicable to the others? And then the Gemara goes on to show that it is not Rabbi Shimon Tameh, because this is a unique din in Rekev, and doesn't have application to our case over here. Now the Gemara continues, Gufa, Malot Arved Rekev, Shnafalu Toko Afar, Koshu, you have a spoon ladleful of rot from the mate. Shenafal l'tocho afar koshu, some dirt or earth got mixed in with it. Tameh, Rabbi Shimon Midair. Melo Tavad Rekev Shinit Pazer Babayit, that got distributed in the house. Habayit Tamei, the house is Tamei. Rabbi Shimon Mitaher. Rabbi Shimon says it's Tahor. So it sounds like you're dealing with the same issue. And why do we need the both of these Brito to tell us the same machloket? That the Rabbanim believe that even if there's a fire in there, that the Rekev is still Tamei, Rabbi Shimon's Mitaher. And then you have a Lo Tavad Rekev that was spread out in the house. Maybe there too. The real problem is that when it's spread out, there are other things intervening between the aggregated amount. And so then Rabbi Shimon is mitayer because there's other stuff mixed in with it. And the Rabbanan are not mitayer. So why do you need both of them? Mitzricha. If you only have the first braita, over there, maybe the Rabbanan disagree with Rabbi Shimon because it's aggregated in a single location inside the spoon. But if it was distributed, like in the second braita, maybe they would agree with Rabbi Shimon's opinion that at that point, it's no longer called rekev, because it's too distributed amongst the OL. Because the OL can't aggregate the pieces together. There's no OL over a singular unit of rekev. When they're aggregated, then the singular unit of rekev that meets the shiur is in one place, and the OL, a single part of the OL, is mahil al the shi'ur rekev that you need. But when it's nitpazer, then no single part of the OL is mahil on the minimum shi'ur that you need to meet. Rather, it's distributed amongst the house. Now you have to say that OL aggregates it and makes it into tumata OL, even though it's distributed. So you would think the Chachamim maybe didn't say that. The answer is, or Kamash Malan, that's why we brought the second bright to say the Chachamim still in that case, likets tameh. V'yashmin and baha. We only had the second braita. Maybe over there, Rabbi Shimon believes that you can't have it be mahil and then be mahil again, being that it can't be aggregated by the ohel being distributed in the ohel. But baha, the case of the spoon or the ladle that has the rekev in it with some afar, maybe modelo the rabbanan, because there it's aggregated into a single location. So he would agree with the rabbanan. Tzricha, that's why we need both braito to teach us the machloki between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. Tanya Yidach. Now we have a third braita. Lotarvad ve'od afar bebeit hakvarot. If you have a lotarvad and a little more of a fire of dirt from beit hakvarot, from a cemetery, from a place where a maid decomposed, tamei, Rabbi Shimon mitaher. And Rabbi Shimon is mitaher in that case. What exactly the scenario is, Rashi says over here, v'on shenik var b'ksuto o b'karka below aron. Rashi says that there shouldn't have been rekev over here because you have other items that were buried with the mate. You had it buried in its tachrichim. You had the mate buried without being put into a marble coffin, sarcophagus. And now the mate decomposed and you're picking up that decomposition. In that decomposition is the other items that decomposed, and that's why there's no rekev of a mate. But Rashi says is over here, you picked up melo tarvad ba'od. You picked up the requisite shiur plus more. My time I have the rabbonon. What's the reason behind the rabbonon's position? The fish have shar the melo tarvad ba'od, a fire, beta kvarot, shembo melo tarvad rekev. Because once you take melo tarvad and od and more, then by definition, in Melo Tarvad Ba'od, there's going to be a Melo Tarvad worth of rekev. So as long as you got more than the minimum shiur, that little more that you take compensates for the fact that there's something else mixed in over here. And given that, you have now the requisite shiur that you need. So the idea being, according to Rashkin, is that within that Melo Tarvad Ba'od, you have a Melo Tarvad worth of rekev amet, which means that the ode overcomes the problem of there being other things mixed in there, which is that when you pick it all up on an aggregated basis, you're going to get to Melo Tarvad Rekev because you took more than the minimum shiur you need, and that more will compensate for the fact that there were other things that decomposed over there. Tosafot disagrees with Rashi, and he says, it doesn't make any sense that if you start out with an object that will decompose with the body, there's no Rekev Amet. It doesn't exist, period. You don't have Rekev Amet in that situation. It doesn't matter how much of it you collect. There's no rekev amet because something else decomposed with it. Therefore, he brings near the Rashbam, the Achamari, because Nikvar Arum. He was buried naked. And they used to put their bodies into an area that's dug into the bedrock. And then they used to plaster it with lime. And after it decomposes, there was a tarvat mimenu, that is tamei, and then some of the seed got mixed up with it, because seed is the type of item that does decompose, or that will be affected by rekev a mate. So the mate was buried in such a manner that it can have rekev, and the rekev pooled to get to the minimum shiur, but then afterwards it gets mixed up with the lime, and now he's picking up melotarvad bo'od. He's picking up melotarvad worth of it, plus more. So Rashi and Tosafot argue about exactly what the scenario is here. And in this case, we said that the Chachamim say tamei, Rabbi Shimon is there. Hashta damart the time of the Rabbi Shimon mishom sofok etzchilato. So now that you said that the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon is because we look at the end like the beginning, gabi shulya my time. Then what's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon's position? So now Vali Tosafot and the others Rishonim ask on Rashi, what do you mean? What's the reason? According to Rashi, we already explained the reason. It was rekev that had something else mixed in with it. And according to Rashi, if that's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon's position, both by Shulya and over here, we already know why Rabbi Shimon's position is. Why is the Gemara asking, what is Rabbi Shimon's position? On the other hand, according to the Ramban and the Bali Tosafot, where the Gemara now made it a unique din in Rekev, then now I don't know why Shulya is Tahor, because we don't have any explanation of that now. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Bito Berov Naguba. It is because of Bito that they say that's the case. Vazer Rabbi Yochanan the Tamei, and this is Rabbi Yochanan the Shita Do. Dam Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon, Elazar ben Yaakov Amru Dabar Echad. Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov have the same opinion. Rabbi Shimon had Amran. Rabbi Shimon is our scenario over here. Mishum Bito Berov. So the Bito over here makes it that the Vlad is no longer existent, because the Dama Leida overwhelms and dissolves the Vlad that's there. And then it's Mivatel, the Vlad, as if it doesn't exist. Keman Deleite Domi. It's as if it doesn't exist at all. So even though it's there, and even though according to the Bible, it's there in its entirety, nevertheless, because the liquids that discharged with it are overwhelming it and are Mivatel it, it's as if it doesn't exist anymore. And even though it's clear from Rabbi Yochanan that the other discharge that comes out from the woman is overwhelming the Vlad, then it should be Batel Barov. What's the sheet of Rabbi Meir then, that it is Tameh? The Ramban suggests that Rabbi Meir believes that there's no such thing as Bitel Barov by Ohel. Because the idea of Bitel Barov is that if I come into contact with an item, or I interact with the item, what am I interacting with? So if you have another item that's robed there, the possibility, or it's a distinct possibility, you're not interacting with the Tumah, and that's why there is no din of Tumah. Another case, by Ohel, the Ohel is Mahil on the entirety of the item. Whether the item is small or big doesn't matter, because the Ohel is Mahil on everything. And therefore, maybe Bitul Barov doesn't have application by Tumah to Ohel. And that's the way he explains Shita Rabbi Meir, according to this view of Rabbi Yochanan. To enhance that, you could also suggest that Rabbi Meir doesn't believe that Bitul Barov is viewed as Kamandalete Dami, as if it doesn't exist. According to him, Bitul Barov means that our interaction with the item is governed by the Barov, but it doesn't mean that the item doesn't exist. And if the item still exists, even though it might be, there's a Rove that overwhelms it, then in Tumat Ohel it would still be relevant, because the interaction with the item is the whole item, because the Ohel is Mahil on the entirety of that item. So that we have in Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, what's his opinion? The Tanya. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Behema Gasa, if you have a large animal, Sheshafa Charer Adam, that discharged a block of blood, Harizo Tikaver, you bury it, Uptura Mina Bechora, and then the animal in its subsequent birth will not have a din of Bechora, because this was the Bechor, this was the Peter Rechem that was discharged over here. Vitani Rabbi Chia Allah, Rabbi Chia qualified that and said, Enu Matama Lo Bimaga Velo Bimasa. It doesn't have any Tumah. It doesn't have Tumah Maga, not Tumah Masa. It is not a Vlad, basically. Well, if it's not a Vlad, why do you have to bury it? Because it doesn't have any Tumah associated with it, and it's not a Vlad. Basically, you're telling me it's not a Vlad. To tell you that it is Turah Min HaBechorah, so you bury it, so people know that this animal already discharged something that is Peter Rechem, and the next fetus that's going to be born will not be a Bechora. Mar says, Alma Vlad Malyu. If that's true, then you're deeming it a Vlad. If it's a Vlad, my Tani Rabbi Chia, Inu Mitameh, Lo B'Magav, Lo B'Masa. then how do you reconcile with Rabbi Chiya's position that there's no Tumat Magal Masa? You have to have it one way or the other. Either it is a vlad, and that's why there's Peter Rechem over here, but if there's a vlad, then there's Tumah that's associated with it of Magal Masa. If it's the other way around, there's no Tumat Magal Masa, there's no vlad, then there's also no Peter Rechem that happened over here. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Bitul Barov, Naguba. In Ochanami, there is a vlad here, but the vlad was overwhelmed with the discharge that came out. So as far as Peter Rechem is concerned, a vlad was discharged. The vlad that was discharged makes it that there's no longer a Bechor Le-Kohen, meaning that the next fetus that's born will not have a din of Dushat Bechor. On the other hand, as far as Tumah and Tahara are concerned, the vlad was overwhelmed by the other discharge that came out. That other discharge that came out makes it that the Tumah is now Batel or Kamandalete Dami as far as Tumah and Tahara are concerned. So this is basically the same shita. That's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and Rabbi Shimon are of the same opinion, which is the other discharge or liquids that come out overwhelm the vlad and make it that it's batel berov and it's kamandalete dam. It's as if it doesn't exist. Now, it will exist in terms of the birthing process for Peterech because the vlad came out. It won't exist for Tumantara because of the other liquids and other things that are discharged along with it. So, Amar Rabbi Ami, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Umode Rabbi Shimon, Shimot Me'a Leida. Rabbi Shimon agrees that the mother has Tumat Leida. So this is somewhat along the lines of the Peter Rechem aspect of this, which is, if there was a vlad that exited, then the woman gave birth. And that's why there is no Bechor afterwards, because it was a Peter Rechem. So it has classification as a vlad. As far as Leida is concerned, it does not have classification of vlad as far as Tumah and Tahara are concerned. And so that would be the same thing here with the terms of the Leida. So Amar Utsaba the Rabbi Ami, Asabra Lecha Taimid the Rabbi Yochanan. I'll explain to you the reasoning behind Rabbi Yochanan's position here. Damar Kra, Isha ki Tazria v'yal da Zachar. That's the Parshiyah at the beginning of Parshiyah Tazria that says a woman who gives birth to a Zachar has the following dinim in terms of Tumat Leida, in terms of Korbanot that she has to bring. Afilu lo yalda el ke'en she'ezria t'mei aleida. Starting from the word ki tazria v'yalda, tazria is the way that the conception happens, and the same way that the conception happens is the same way that the birth happens. Which means just like the conception was from a liquid zera that fertilized the egg, so too in the reverse, if there's a discharge that is in a liquid form like the zera, it's still called a leida. Rishlaka shamar, shafir she. Tarfu b'meimav nasek meit shenit balbilat surato. That if you have a fetal sac that had obviously a vlad inside of it, or it had some sort of vlad there, shitarfua that was mixed up or stirred or scrambled in the amniotic fluid nasek meit, it's equivalent to a meit shenit balbilat surato whose form has been undermined or destroyed. This is another one of the reasons as to why Tosafot challenges Rashi's explanation that the problem here is Rekeb and Netzel by the case of the Shilya from the Amud Aleph, because over here you see that Rabbi Shlakish says the Bilbil Tzurato. Bilbil Tzura is not a relevant factor by Rekeb, because by definition Bilbil Tzurato, the Rekeb is the result of a Bilbil Tzura. If that's the case, then how could Rabbi Shlakish be giving that explanation as to the reason as to why a Shilya is Tahor? That's one of Tosafot's reasons as to why he thinks Rashi's explanation here is incorrect. Amar le Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, mate shenit babalad surato minalan de Tahor. It's clear that Reish Lakish thinks that it is Tahor, and the reasoning Reish Lakish thinks it's Tahor here is because if it gets mixed up, then there's no more suratamate. The lack of suratamate makes it that it is Tahor. So Rabbi Yochanan challenges him not from the connection that he makes, but from his original position, which is, you're assuming that when you have a mate, shenit balbalat surato, that it's no longer mitameh. Your assumption then is, if that's the case, so too with a fetus that gets mixed up, the same thing will be true. But is it really true what you're saying, that a mate, shenit balbalat surato, is tahor? If it's true that you got it from this memra of Rabbi Shabtai, Rabbi Yitzhak Magdala, which will remind you of the Magdalene, which was either a name of a location or a profession that's argued in the story that's brought in the Gemara in Chagigah with Miriam Magdala. And over there, the Balei Tosafot discuss what is the meaning of Magdala over there. Is Magdala the name of a location, or is Magdala the name of a profession? Then determine, as the Baal HaTosafot say over there, what's the correlation between this Miriam Magdala and Mary of Magdalene. But over here you see that Rav Yitzchak Magdala came from that location. It was the name of a location, not necessarily a profession. That the order of the memra was reversed as to who said it and who was quoting them. Meit shenisraf, a meit that is consumed by fire, v'shildo kayemet, and its skeletal remains are still intact, tamei. You would think from that, and this is what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, Rish Lakish, you made a diok out of that. That's because shildo kayemet, because the shape or the skeletal remains are intact, that's why it's tamei. Implying that if it was distributed, it would not be tamei. If it was ruined, it wouldn't be tamei. Masev haya v'tim olo p'tachim gidolim v'tirolo p'tachim kitanim. They had a maisa like this, and they were mitamei, the big doorways, and not the small doorways. Because dayek mina, and you were mitayek out of this. Taimo de shildo kayemet. That's because the skeletal form is still intact. Halav ochi, had it not been for that, it would have been tahor. So that's your diuk, that when you have a mate that is nitbalbel, it is no longer mitamei. So too, by the fetus, the shafir that is being discharged here, if it's mituraf, it wouldn't be mitamei. You don't have to make that diuk. Adarava, dok minala haigisa. You can make the following diuk. Shildo kayemet, ho ditarolo ptachim tanim. The reason that the din of the brayta is true is because the skeletal remains were intact. That's why only the big doors were tamei, and the small doors were not tamei. That is because there is a rule that when you have a mate in the house, the mate has to leave the house somehow. Since it has to leave the house somehow, all the frame, door frames are tamei. Not just the house itself, but all the door frames are for tamei, because we assume it's going to exit from one of those doorways. When it actually exits from the doorways, it's machloket, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, as to whether then prospectively only that door frame is tamei, everything else is tahor, or even retroactively that determines which doorway was tamei and the remainder are tahor. But in that scenario, all the smaller openings, their frames are not tamei, because the mate can't go out that way. The mate is a whole mate, and the mate needs a minimum shiur of arba tfachim to exit. So anything that's above four tfachim will be considered a petach that could be tamei, therefore the frame is tamei, because the mate could exit from there. Any opening that's below that amount, the frame itself will not be tamei, because the mate can't and won't exit through there. So what Rabbi Yochanan is suggesting is maybe that's the deal. When it is whole, the mate, then it can only exit through larger doorways. Because each one of them then is ra'oi to have piecemeal, the mate be taken out through them, then they all become tamei. If shildo enu kayemet, if the mate is not a whole entity, then it can exit not only from the bigger doorways, it can even exit from the smaller doorways, because it can go out piecemeal, because it is piecemeal, it's not one whole mate anymore. If that's the case, maybe that's the deal you should make. When shildo kayemet, then the ptachim dolim are tzmeim and the ptachim tanim are tahorim. When ain't shildo kayemet, both the ptachim dolim and the ptachim tanim will be tamei. That's the deal to make, not that it's tahor. And therefore your proof is not a good proof. So Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, you're arguing about what the deal is out of this memra that was brought by Rabbi Yitzchak Magdala and Rabbi Shabtai, as to whether it tells you that a ain't shildo kayemet is tahor, which is Reish Lakish's conclusion. From that, he parlays that into explaining why, if you have a vlad that's nitraf, that it is not considered to have tumat hamet, because it's similar to a mate, shinit balbel, surato. Or to tell you ain't shildo kayemet has impact in a oel hamet, in a case of a house, as to whether the frames of the smaller doorways are tamei or not tamei. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's diok, got him there at position. Amale Ravina the Ravashi, Rabbi Yochanan Damar Kiman. Who is Rabbi Yochanan holding like that? He's basically saying that even when the form or the tzurat mate is not intact, it's still mitamei. Be'ol. Ki Rabbi Eliezer, that's not. You have a Mishnah in Olot. Efer Srufin. The ashes of those bodies that were incinerated. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Shi'uram Birova. Then the shiur of that is Rova Akav of those ashes, are considered to be mitamei boel. So you see from Rabbi Eliezer that there is, even with the loss of the shape or tzurat amet, you still can have a rova akav of those ashes create tumat amet. And so Rabbi Eliezer says tumat amet still exists even when she'll go enu kayemet, even when the tzurat amet is no longer there. Tosafot points out that Rabbi Yochanan's question on Reish Lakish is somewhat disingenuous because Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, which means that Reish Lakish's opinion is premised on the sheet of the Rabbanon, which is a much better position to take. So what the Balei Tosafot say over here is that really both Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are arguing within the Rabbanon Shita as to what the din is over here. And that is, why are the Rabbanon mitaher when it comes to the ashes? Reish Lakish claims that it's because of the bilbul tzura, because the loss of the structure or the shape of the individual, that's what makes it that you're tahor after this sreifa. And Rabbi Yochanan challenges him and says, how do you know that? Maybe the reason behind the Rabbanon is because once it's burnt, ein alav shemet. Maybe the reason that it is tahor is because once it's burnt, it no longer has shema meit on it because of the fact that the meit has been consumed or incinerated over here. And then the whole statement of Rabbi Yitzchak, according to Rabbi Yochanan, is in the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. And therefore he says it's not relevant to our Gemara over here, as opposed to Reish Lakish, who thinks it's in the sheet of the Rabbanan and thinks it is relevant to our Gemara over here. And that leads to their differing opinions. The difference between those reasons as to why the Rabbanan are mitaher by the case of the incinerated body would then have impact on whether you can extrapolate it to the case of Shilya, to our case over here, which is according to Reish Lakish, where it's because it got mixed up and ruined the shape, then just like over there when it got ruined the shape, so to over here when the shape is totally dissolved and ruined, it also will be tahor. According to Rabbi Yochanan, that it's a unique din by Sreifa, that the Sreifa makes it as if the mate doesn't exist anymore, then over here that's not relevant, because over here the item is still intact. May not be able to see it, it's dissolved, but it's not burnt or incinerated, and therefore over here you can't apply that which the Rabbanan say over there to our case over here. So then it would be tameh if it were not for the fact that it was batel berov, and that's the reasoning behind why it's tahor over here. And that's machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Why over here by the shilya or the shafir that is born, is it tahor? According to Rabbi Yochanan, it's because it's batel berov. For Reish Lakish, it's because ibud surah. That machloket is developed because of their differing opinions with regards to the incineration of a mate, whereby Reish Lakish says it's tahor because of the ibud surah, whereas Rabbi Yochanan says it's tahor because it was no longer a mate, it was incinerated, and that's why it's tahor. But over here, where the entity is still intact, it wasn't incinerated, you need something else to be mitaherit, and that's what is bitul birov. Or you can even say that Rabbi Yochanan believes, according to the Rabbanon, they're only mitaher by rov akav chaser. But if the afar is shalem, if all the ashes are there, even if the shelet, even if the tzura is not intact, the Rabbanan would agree that it is tameh. And if that's the case, then Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish think that the Rabbanan's position is relevant to Rabbi Yitzchak and to Shilya v'Shafir. And that is because they don't require Shildo Kayemet, according to this, the Rabbanan. Whereas Reish Lakish thinks the Rabbanan do require Shildo Kayemet. That difference in opinion then will lead to the difference in opinion with regards to Shafir v'Shilya as to whether when it's not intact, is that enough to make it Tamei and you need Bitul Barov, that'd be Rabbi Yochanan Shita, or Reish Lakish, who believes that the Rabbanan also believe you need Shildo Kayemet. That's the case. By Shilya, you don't have Shildo Kayemet, it's Batel Tzurato, and that's why it's Tor. Heichidami Meit Shenisraf v'Shildo Kayemet. How do you have a mate that was consumed or incinerated by fire, but the shelet, the shape, or the skeletal remains of the mate are still intact? Amar Abaye, Konshus Sarfu Agabe Katablo. It's a case where it was burnt on top of a, Rashi says, or shaluk, a hide that was cooked, that is somewhat fireproof. And so then you have the case where it's burnt on that or, and the or doesn't get burnt. And therefore it leaves the remains of the mate in their shape on the tavla, because the tavla itself doesn't burn. Tosafot even says that it's not only that it was, that the katabla is still intact, but the katabla is actually formed around the mate. The person or the body was lying there and it formed to him. And then when the body's burnt, the ashes sit in the grooves of what once was the mate that was inside of the katabla. Rava Amar Kigon Shesarfo Agabe Apodrim, that it was burnt on top of a marble table or a marble block. And again, Rashi notes over here, it has to have a Beit Kibul. It has to have a frame around it so that the ashes stay intact in the human form there. And that allows it to be incinerated, but still keep its surah, because the item itself doesn't burn. And the ashes are all now gathered together in their form of what the body was. And they're not nitpazer, because according to Reish Lakish, if it starts to distribute, then it's no longer surah tamet, and it would be tahor. So how do we have shildo kayemet? And these scenarios is that the ashes are still together. Either, as Tosfot says, there's a form inside of the leather that maintains the tzurat ha'adam, according to Rashi, simply the fact that it was burnt on this object and remains intact makes it look like you can see the shape of the person that's still there on the leather. Ravina Amar, if you're going to ichruche, it's a case where it wasn't incinerated. The body doesn't need to be incinerated. It could be that the body was burnt, but not incinerated. If it's burnt and not incinerated, the bones will still be intact. Shildo kayemet. Even though the body or the flesh and everything else was consumed or burnt by the fire. And so that's how you can have it be burnt and still be shildo kayemet. Okay, we're going to stop here. 12 lines down on the top of Chavchet Amud Aleph.